Good morning, Judge Carney, Judge Mannion, Judge Evans, opposing counsel. May it please the court. This case presents, on the one hand, a very simple analysis of the amount of drugs sold in a conspiracy emanating from a series of drug houses that were maintained in Rockford, Illinois, from approximately 2001 to approximately the August of 2005. There's no question that the Titanic Stones were operating multiple drug houses and selling large quantities of drugs. As to the other co-defendants, as to my defendant, Jamal McKay, he was approximately 14 years old and living in Atlanta, Georgia when this started, and came to Rockford at the very tail end, approximately the last 6 weeks of the entire organization's existence. He initially met a girl who became amorously involved, and she had connections to these people, and he started seeing her and hanging around the house, and at some point agreed to sell drugs. The entire issue before the court is what was reasonably foreseeable to Jamal McKay during his involvement with the Titanic Stones. He was recruited. His agreement was to sell heroin. The organization for almost its entire existence was a heroin-selling organization. And in the very last weeks, in the summer of 2005, the leader of the organization, a man by the name of Davis, his nickname was Duck or Clue, recruited and all the testimony of the trials had essentially two people, a man by the name of Dupre Turner and a man by the name of Bobby Harris, to include crack in the line of sales. Now, in their testimony, every single person who testified at trial said that Jamal McKay sold heroin. That was his involvement. The law enforcement authorities in the Rockford area placed cameras in one of the drug houses for a period of approximately a month. It generated 2,080 hours of tape. Just so you understand, this house was a one-bedroom house. It had a bathroom and a bedroom, of course, and for privacy reasons, there was no camera placed in the bathroom or in the bedroom where at times people would go during their shift. During that time period, it only showed Jamal McKay in the house on 8 days. It would be virtually impossible unless he spent the entire time in one of the bedrooms or the bathrooms or been there for more than 8 days. But what we attempted to do, because people were assigned turns or shifts, and they were 24-hour shifts, is take the total amount of traffic that came up to the window of that and approximate how much the drug sales would have been during that time period. Now, during that time period, there was also another house where he was briefly, and I think there was a total of 2 or 3 days that he was placed there in testimony. When asked, the judge conducted a series of hearings or status hearings before the trial. There were two in an attempt to clarify and refine the issues after a trial. He informed us he'd be relying on the trial testimony and to see if we could narrow down the issues, because initially the government believed, based on the testimony of one individual, that he may have been there earlier than these 6 weeks we ultimately agreed on. We had witnesses who would come in from Georgia, his high school coach, his teachers, who would testify that he wasn't even remotely in the area during big chunks of that time. What we did was we counted. Now, the cameras were placed. One was on the exterior of the house and counted the cars coming up and showed people walking up to the house. So there was another one inside that showed the people what they were doing inside the house, the people who were selling the drugs. We counted a total in the eight-day period of approximately of 320 cars. Now, that doesn't mean there were 320 or 40 a day that were buying drugs. Because of that, there was a pizza delivery man who made repeated visits to the house, supplying them with food. The girlfriends came. Mr. Davis himself came in a Cadillac Escalade. Then we went to the amount of drugs that were testified to by the various people testifying, and we tried to approximate the best sense of how much heroin was actually delivered during that time period. That came to a total of 960 grams, and that was actually the most generous amount the defendant could concede. The government ultimately stipulated to that. As to the crack cocaine in this, there was no testimony that Mr. McKay ever sold or agreed to sell cocaine. There really was no testimony that he was present during. There's no video that shows him going and serving somebody crack cocaine. When the government was asked to isolate a tape in which, or a clip in which they could see that, they were not able to identify one. Mr. Bobby Harris.
Your time is up for you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Mr. Flynn, just have a seat up here at the council table.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. As Mr. Flynn just stated, this case involves a conspiracy that took place in Rockford over about 4 years, perhaps 4.5 years. My client, Mr. Davis, admittedly was in charge of that conspiracy. And after entering his plea of guilty to 2 counts of the indictment, the court at sentencing had to calculate the amount of drugs for which Mr. Davis and this conspiracy was responsible. It's our position that based upon what the court had before it, it essentially was required to and did speculate as to these amount of drugs without an adequate evidentiary basis. Again, as Mr. Flynn just pointed out, the police investigation and the testimony that was presented at the trial of some other members of this conspiracy focused almost entirely on a 3-month period of time in the summer of 2005. And there was testimony from any number of people as to the amount of heroin distributed by this conspiracy during that period of time, which the court used to make its calculations of the amounts of heroin sold in 2005. But there was essentially no testimony at all as to what this conspiracy delivered in 2004, 2003, 2002, in 2001. And interestingly enough, even the court itself found that it couldn't assess any amounts for the year 2001 because the testimony was too vague, I believe, as the court put it. It's our position that it wasn't any less vague as to 2002, 3, or 4. The three witnesses relied upon, the testimony of the three witnesses relied upon by the court, again, focused on, well, two of them didn't even join the conspiracy until the summer of 2005. And the third one, even the government conceded at the hearing, couldn't provide any reliable evidence as to any amounts or even types of drugs sold in the preceding years. So what we believe the court essentially did is say, well, since you did or delivered a certain amount in the month of August 2005, that must have been what you were doing, excuse me, in 2004 and 2003 and 2002, when there's no evidentiary basis for that kind of supposition. I guess I'd contrast the facts here to the case principally relied on by the government, this court's opinion in Acosta, where the court, again, had to make an approximation, an estimation of drugs sold, but was presented with testimony of a co-conspirator in that case of specific delivery dates and amounts during 3 specific periods of time during that conspiracy from which the court could then extrapolate amounts. But we didn't have that here. There was nothing other than to indicate that the conspiracy existed for those number of years, but not what it delivered or sold beyond that. And based upon that, we believe that the court erred in finding that the defendant delivered more than 10 kilos, I'm sorry. Clearly, he delivered more than 3, and so we believe that the base offense level should have been 2 points lower because of that significant difference in amount of drugs delivered. As to the other issue, I guess at this point I would simply, unless you have any questions, stand on the argument I made in my brief.
Thank you, Mr. Hilty. Mr. Bindi?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court.
Counsel.
I'll begin with Mr. McKay. The main argument seems to be that Mr. McKay should not be held responsible for any of the crack cocaine that was being sold out of the Kishwaukee house during the time that that he was also there selling heroin. Your Honors, there was a single conspiracy charge here, and it was alleged in that charge that there was an agreement to sell both drugs, both heroin and crack cocaine. Both were sold out of the same house. As the district court found, Mr. McKay benefited from the joint action. The higher-ups in this conspiracy provided him and others selling both types of drugs with a place to sell the drugs from and security from law enforcement and rivals in that location. So the district court's finding that Mr. McKay was responsible for the crack cocaine is not clearly erroneous. And the district court's finding regarding the amount for purposes of setting the mandatory minimum also is not clearly erroneous. The court found that clearly the amount was over 50 grams. With regard to Mr. Davis, there is solid evidence from the dealings during the summer of 2005, and the district court found that at a rock bottom, they were moving about a half a kilo of heroin a month just out of the Kishwaukee house. Using just that figure, the court estimated that for the year 2005, from January through September, they sold approximately 3 kilograms. Now, that's a low estimate. Using a half a kilogram per month estimate, you could have gone to 4 or 5 kilograms for 2005, but the district court went down to 3. Now, looking back at the previous years, 2002 through 2004, you know that the drug houses were up and running and that Darryl Davis was supplying them with heroin packs because of the testimony of Ambrose Jones, the defendant's driver and confidant, from 2002 through the end of the conspiracy. He testified that they were routinely making deliveries of drugs to these drug houses. In addition to that, you have, during that period of time, or at least some of that period of time, evidence from trash pulls where you had drug paraphernalia being recovered to corroborate the fact that these drug houses were up and running. You have testimony of customers who routinely visited and testified that they were able to get drugs whenever they needed and that the houses were up and running. Some evidence from arrests, such as cash and heroin cutting agents that were recovered from Mr. Davis and others, made it reasonable for the district court to conclude that similar amounts of drugs were being trafficked in the years 2002, 2003, and 2004. The government argued essentially that the evidence showed well over 60 kilograms of heroin being moved during the entire period of the conspiracy. The district court went with what it regarded as an extremely conservative estimate and found that it was no less than 13 kilograms. For these reasons, Your Honors, we respectfully request that this court affirm the judgment. Thank you.
Mr. Flynn, your time had run out, but I'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it. Just briefly in rebuttal, Your Honor, as to the crack cocaine, the case law is clear that by preponderance of the evidence, the judge must find the amount, and that is 50 grams or more to trigger this mandatory minimum. The judge never did that. The judge found a 45 gram. He essentially went with a gram and a half a day for approximately 30 days and came up with 45 grams. He converted that to marijuana, as I pointed out in the beginning of the brief, added it to the heroin, and came up with a mandatory minimum 10 years based on the fact that this alchemy of the two separate substances, which by themselves would not give you a mandatory minimum of 10 years, approximated 1,860 kilos of marijuana, and selling more than 1,000 kilos of marijuana would. It's clear what he did. He repeats it 2 or 3 times in the transcripts, and it was not based on a finding by preponderance of the evidence that more than 50 grams of cocaine was attributable to Jamal McKay. I ask the court to send this back for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.